Okay, so it is 7 o'clock though, and so I think we are ready to get started. She's coughing, I'm coughing.
I'm
so
fine.
You're good, you're good. All right, well, welcome to the Cough Fest. This is My Book Therapy's open house, and we're so excited to have you all here. We have a webinar every Thursday night, and we're very, very excited to open it up on our first Thursday of every night or every month and talk to you guys about writing and publishing and just sort of, try to inspire you a little bit. And we've done lots of different kinds of webinars, whether it's like, getting your story on the page or, craft webinars or whatever. Tonight, we're really going to be talking about dream killers. And I really felt like this was important because as the story continue, or, as the school year begins, all of us have sort of this desire to jump in and say, okay, what are we going to do with our year? Our children have gone back to school. Hopefully that we have time to do something. If you don't have children, maybe it is just a time of year where you want to reassess. And for a lot of people, they say, okay, what am I going to do? Do I have time to pursue my dream? And there are a lot of dream killers out there. I remember when I was a young mom and, as I was starting my writing journey, there was a lot of voices in my head that kept me from pursuing my dreams. So tonight we're going to be talking about those dream killers and how you can defeat them and push forward on your journey. So I have with me two of my favorite people. Above me is Rachel Houck. She is a best-selling award-winning author, my writing craft partner, one of my best buddies, and she helped me start My Book Therapy and has been instrumental in helping so, so many people with their writing careers. And below me is one of my other besties, Beth Vode, who is a multi-published author and a this year's Carol Award finalist for a contemporary novel. We're so very proud of her. And she is also so talented in helping people come bring their stories to life. She actually is one of our skills coaches, she is our skills coach at My Book Therapy. So we are in good hands tonight, or I am in good hands. I'm sandwiched between my two inspirations and help and people that really helped me in my own writing process. It's so fun for me. I can actually call either one of these ladies and say, okay, here's my problem, and they will help me solve it without even knowing what the story is about. So it's fantastic. So we are going to talk together about dream killers and how to help you on the journey and help you get your dreams onto the paper and pursue your dreams. So let's just talk a little bit about someone who really did start with big dreams, Steve Jobs. I really love this quote by him. He says, "Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice, heart, and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary." All right. So the idea is that you need to start following your intuition, your voice, and not other people's voices. Now, I'm going to pause here and say one thing, and that is I actually forgot to say this, but this is something that's important for you guys. There's three reminders I want to give you before we get going tonight. One is that I talk very fast, and I like to give you guys an overview of what's going on. So if you want to dig deeper, I do encourage you to go to mybooktherapy.com and search our library. We have over 1,000 articles to help you go deeper and slow a topic down so you can really understand it. Also, we're going to offer a replay of this so you can listen again and again if you'd like. Second of all, we do offer classes on all of this material, even this inspirational stuff, in a more casual classroom setting with Q&A in our premium membership. And so we do have premium members here tonight. Because we have people at all levels, I try to cover basics in a webinar. So I'm going to talk some nuts and bolts tonight, but it is sort of big picture stuff. If you want to go deeper and get lots of interaction with your fellow writers, I would encourage you to check out our premium membership, which means that also we are going to talk about that a little bit during halftime. So I'm going to cover 10 points and then I'm going to have a little halftime talk and talk to you a little bit about what My Book Therapy is all about. And then we will continue on. All right. So now my commercial and prelude is over. Check. And so let's just talk about our first dream killer. And that one is, and these are lies that people say to us. And that is, you can't afford to pursue your dreams. Okay. Now, another one that they say in conjunction to that is maybe you should wait until you have more time, energy, money. In other words, someday. Okay. Now, I don't know about you guys, but this was something that I struggled with a lot when I first started writing. I was a missionary in Russia And I knew that I loved to write, but I was a missionary in Russia. I had stuff to do. I was very busy. I taught English as a second language. I had four little kids. I was taking care of my family. Excuse me. I didn't have time to pursue my dreams. And yet, at the same time, my dreams were not going away. And we're going to get to that. What does it mean to have a dream in just a second? But the reality is that you're never going to have time to do this. All right. It's never going to be something that's convenient. Oh, I have this big chunk of time now. I think I'm going to sit down and write a novel. It will always get filled up. It's sort of like when you have an increasing income. You always spend the extra money that you have. You always spend the extra time that you have. And so waiting for someday for, a different season of life or what, or your children to, grow up or whatever, you can do that. But the fear is that something else is going to fill that time. And so the reality is that just like you can't afford to have children, you just do it and it somehow make it work. When you have a dream that you want to pursue, waiting till it works for you is not going to happen. I had a girlfriend that, it was about 8 years ago, she retired. And she says to me, "Oh, I'm so glad I'm retired because now I will have time to write." 8 years later, she has written nothing. She has started a few novels and we sat down and talked about things. She has never done it because she wasn't pushed to do it. She wasn't like, when we etch out time out of our valuable schedules and say, "Oh, I'm going to do this," that time becomes valuable because we know how hard it is to get. But if it's just something that's easy to get, well, for some reason, we as humans don't pursue it. So if you have 2 hours a day and that's all you've got to write, or 2 hours a week and that's all you have to write, then you're going to make the most of that 2 hours. And you are actually going to be more motivated during those 2 hours than if you had 6 hours or 8 hours or 6 weeks. That is why one reason why I tend to work on tight deadlines, because it motivates me to get the writing done. I don't work on a book that's due in a year. I work on a book that's due in 3 months because I've got a little fire lit under me. And so if you have a lot to do and a lot in your schedule, this is not a terrible thing. You just need to eke out that time. And we're going to talk about a little strategies of that in just a second here. But you need to work, eke out that time, because it will become very valuable to you as you invest in your time and invest in writing. Rachel and Beth, do you guys have thoughts on this before we get to a little how-tos on this?
You're right.
I like being right.
I have one thought. I work
Yep.
with MOPS International, Mothers of Preschoolers International, and I wrote an article about this for young moms, and that is, I know that that's a season of life when we feel like we have to put things on the back burners, our dreams, because we're raising young children. And what I encouraged the young moms was, you may have to put it on the back burner, but don't turn the heat all the way off. Figure out a way to at least leave it on simmer for a little bit, and keep some level of heat on it. Because if you turn it all the way off, when you do pull that dream back to the front, it's so hard to start it from dead cold, So
Yeah.
leave the simmer on. Find some way to keep your dream going in some little way, whether it's reading books or having one other writer friend that you meet and talk with and pray with or something. So never turn a dream all the way off.
Oh, I love that so much. I think that when I was first writing too, one of the things I did was I tried to put out a monthly newsletter. Now it's so fun. People have blogs and things like that. And you can just start writing by, blogging or putting out a newsletter for your family or even your Christmas newsletter. I have a really great friend who writes the most hilarious Christmas newsletters. Everybody loves to get them. And I read them around the table and I'm thinking, why isn't she writing? Well, she's got these kids and, she's homeschooling, whatever, and it's just not her passion right now, but she's still writing. And that's great. Rachel.
What you guys talked about just made me think that one of the things you might want to do is figure out what exactly it is you do write well. Like, I don't write funny Christmas newsletters. I don't write great articles. I'm not an article writer. And I was a journalism major, and I was like, well, I get the whole, like, you got to have so many sources and you got to quote, you can't embellish, although that's not really the case today. But I was like, can I just, like, make it up? I love truth, and I, Susie will tell you, I'll call a tattoo parlor to find out the name of the needle that they use if it's important to my story. So I do like facts, But I think you have to figure out what you enjoy writing. And if I wasn't writing novels, I would probably be a full-time blogger. So I think that's something that you have to figure out what you do well and what you have actually do have time for. But like Beth said, keep your fingers to the till a little bit and don't totally give up.
Good. Very good. All right, so here's some tricks to finding time when you are a new author or you're just starting out on your journey and you might not have a lot of time. This is sort of what I did when I first started writing, and it really helped me. The first one is that I kept a journal of where and how I spent my time for a week. And it was really important because I spend a lot of my time doing mindless things. And so then I would prioritize how important that thing was just for the week, just to see. And then I took a look and I said, is there any place that I could rearrange to get just a couple hours, maybe twice a week? You know, and I know that sounds crazy, but the reality is that it did help me. And I found out that on Saturday mornings, our family got up and we like walked around the house and did really nothing for about 4 hours as the kids bounced around. And my husband was, you know, he was making breakfast or, you know, whatever. There wasn't a lot of time. And I found myself, you know, picking up the playroom or, you know, whatever. And so I realized if I got up at you know, 7 or 8 in the morning on Saturdays and I worked until noon, which was usually the time my children were watching cartoons and my husband was just trying to be, you know, trying to let it being in his nothing box, you know, that I could find that time. And so that's how I started. I started writing 4 hours every Saturday morning. And my husband gave that to me as a gift. He said, okay, I'll take care of the kids, you know. And so I would like literally put my earphones in so I wouldn't hear what was going on in the next room, because I could hear the screaming and the yelling and the rustling. And if I walked out there, then suddenly I was going to be accountable for walking out there, because they were going to go, Mom, and they would need me. So I stayed in my room and I would just write and turn up the music so I didn't hear it, because I knew they were safe with their dad. And I would just, that's what I did. And so I took those 2 hours, and in 1 year, I had finished a book, a huge 400,000 word novel that never got published. Yes, I know. But the point is that I finished it. I finished it. And it was such an empowering thing to me, because I had finished this book in a year. And it made me realize once I finished it, hey, I could do this again. And so that's what I did. Now, I also had to sacrifice something maybe less important for my dreams. So I often tell people, I don't have like one of these lives that where I'm like going every day to, you know, I don't go to women's Bible study. I don't play tennis. I don't, you know, sometimes I don't exercise. I'll be honest about that. You know, I don't do a lot of other things. I'm pretty focused on what I do. But even back in the day when I was with my kids, you know, my kids would be homeschooled and then we would get done and I would have 2 hours to write. Now, I could have probably taken my kids for a walk or had coffee with a girlfriend or whatever, but I didn't choose to do that because I decided, no, I was going to pursue my writing dreams at that time. So you may have to look at your schedule and say, what can I sacrifice here? And it's not that you want to not spend time with people or whatever it is that's important, but maybe for a season while you get off the ground, you know, you do need to sacrifice something. The third thing is get your family involved. And so, you know, I talked about when I was homeschooling, my kids were little and they would, you know, be done homeschooling for the day and they were pretty much tired of me at that point. So they wanted to go away from me, but I still needed about 2 hours of writing time every day where they weren't, you know, fighting and, you know, this sort of thing. So I would say to them, listen, guys, if you would just give me 2 hours and do everything you can to get along with each other and not fight, then in 2 hours when I'm done, then we will go do something fun. We'll go out for, you know, go for a walk. We'll ride our bikes. We'll get an ice cream cone. We'll go to the park, whatever it is that you guys want to do. And I would give them a little reward, but they would have to sort of, so yes, that's called a bribe, but I would then bribe them and I would say, you know, you give me this and I'll give you this, you know, sort of like you respect me, I'll respect you. And because they were sort of invested in this, I'd come out, hey, I finished my scene. And they'd be like, yay, mommy. And they would have no idea what I just said, but they would be thrilled because I was thrilled. So, and I did tell them the first time I got published, I would take them to Disney World. And that's what I did. I kept my promise. So get your family involved, help them to get excited about what you're doing. And then again, remember, your dream is too important to wait. I mean, it fuels you when you have a dream and you're pursuing it, even if you're doing a small little bit. Women and, you know, and men too tend to be especially parents, tend to be people that just give of themselves. And as a result, what happens is that we leave very little time for ourselves to nurture ourselves. And so when your dream is writing and you can actually spend a couple hours writing, you feel so excited about the fact that you did that, and it nurtures yourself, and frankly, it makes you a better person. I know that my husband and my children have often said to me, "Mom, we like you better after you've written something." And it's true, because I've been able to interact in my heart language. All right, Beth, Rachel, any thoughts about finding time, Rachel?
Yeah, a couple things. I started writing. I worked full time. I was a software project manager. I was in youth ministry, and I led worship. And I was vice president of American Christian Romance Writers. Mm-hmm. And Susie and I were on the board together, and we led it to American Christian Fiction Writers. And I was coordinating the second national conference and had no idea what I was doing. So I didn't have children, but I was very busy. So I just want to say, you know, you do have to just find the time. Now, the reason why Susie's so great at becoming a writing teacher and helping all of us move forward in our publishing dreams is because she actually writes down in a journal what she does for the week, and then analyzes it, and then figures out a solution. I'm reading that and going, there's just no way. I write down what I did. I can do that. And I'm just going to glance at it and go, here's where I can improve my time, or here's where I can find my time. I do a lot of things in my head. And so if you're looking at that thinking, holy cow, how can I do that? Well, what she's telling you here is, be a little bit purposeful about your time, and look at where you can find time to achieve, to go for your dream. And the other big thing that I think is important is, if you start writing with this in mind, hey, I'm going to be a published novelist, you will lose your flame by the end of page one. You cannot start. You got to break down your dream into small bits. You have to say, today my dream is to write chapter one, or my dream is to plan out my novel. I would be totally overwhelmed if I thought I'm sitting down and I hope to be published. Then I would think of all the things that you have to do to get published, and I would just leave the room. Why bother? It's just so many hurdles, so many iron doors. So don't start there. Your dream is to be a published author, but your goal, every time you sit down to write, is to write a chapter or write a scene. So really break it down. And then you get up from that and you're like, yes, I'm doing great. But if you think, oh, I want to be published, and you sit down and you write a scene, you get up, you're still not published. You still got a long way to go. And so you feel ho-hum about it. Your goal is to write a scene. Your goal is to write a chapter. Your goal is to brainstorm with someone. So
good. Very good. By the way, there are people writing in questions, and they're great. I will answer them. I'm going to gather them all up kind of and answer them in big chunks. So if you have a question, feel free to put it in the chat box, and we will be glad to answer them in a little bit. So thanks for sending those in. That's great. All right. Here's dream killer number two. Listen, if you try and fail, you're doomed. People will laugh at you, and you'll have spent all that time for nothing. Seriously? Okay. So, okay, here's the thing. I have met people that believe this. They're like, if I try and I fail, what does that say about me? And they have this big cloud over their head, like, I'm a failure. No, you're a trier. If you try and you fail, that just means that you were awesome and that you tried. And if you fail, you just get back up again. And if you learn from it, you say, okay, well, what didn't work about that? What do I need to adjust? Do I really want this? Just because you fail doesn't mean you are a failure. And so, and I always tell my husband, he and I are always on a journey of trying to eat healthy and exercise. I'm much more of a, hey, I'll just go swim today and eat healthy today. And if I don't eat healthy tomorrow, oh, well, at least I did it today. And then I'm going to attempt to do it the next day. Okay, so I would admit that I don't have a great track record of every single day eating healthy. But I feel like at least if I'm trying to eat healthy and I'm trying to exercise, I'm headed in the right direction. And eventually all of that trying is going to add up, and it's going to be something that actually helps me, as opposed to the idea of, well, I'm just never going to try at all because I know I'm going to fail. Yes, you will fail if you never try. So the reality is that one, you have to keep moving forward and you have to try if you want to make it happen. And the fact is, I respect triers. I really do. I saw this woman out jogging the other day, and she was about my size, and she was jogging, and she was hot and sweaty, and I like wanted to stop and like give her a thumbs up and like hug her and go, "You rock, honey. You are an inspiring person to me because you are trying." And I just think that triers are fantastic. So you're not a failure if you try. Second of all, is that you learn something. This is a good thing. Every time I try to do something, I learn something from it. And even if I fail, I learn something from that. So every time that you are trying to write a scene and you struggle, it's going to push you to want to figure out how to do that better, how to write the scene better, how to get to the emotion, how to construct a scene, all of those kind of things. Because as you're never going to know what you can't do unless you try and push past it. So Beth, you seem like you have something that you'd like to say.
You are going to try and you are going to fail, period. End of discussion, which ties into something I wanted to say about the first thing you were talking about. When you are embarking on a dream, it's so important to find a community like My Book Therapy that surrounds you and encourages you as you support your dream, and to find what I call your safety net, those people who believe in you and your dream. And when you doubt your dream or doubt yourself, they will believe in it for you. And I just find that so crucial to find a mentor. And I know that takes a while to find that. Finding a mentor doesn't happen overnight. Finding other writers who become your safety net, because yes, it's your dream, but you need to have those people who will come alongside you and believe in that dream with you. Doesn't happen overnight, but it's vital, because there will be times of discouragement and you need those people who will sit in the dirt with you, hug you, and then say, "Now get up and you're going to keep trying."
Yeah.
It's crucial.
Excellent. I love that. That really dovetails nicely with this quote from Mark Twain, which is one of my favorites. He says, "Keep away from people who try to belittle your ambitions. Small people always do that, but they're really great, make you feel that you too can become great. When you are seeking to bring big plans to fruition, it is important with whom you regularly associate. Hang out with friends who are like-minded and who are also designing purpose-filled lives. Similarly, be that kind of a friend for your friends." And that's sort of the motto of My Book Therapy in many ways. We do not belittle anyone's dreams. We are your cheerleaders, and we are each other's cheerleaders, and we believe that everyone can pursue this, and everyone can get published if they really, really work at it. I've always said publishing is not magic, it's hard work. And so we all work hard, but we all celebrate and enjoy the process. And that brings me to the very next slide, which is, life is a journey, not a destination. I love this quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson. And I would say writing is a journey, not a destination. Yes, we get to the end of our book. Yes, we want to get published. But every book that we get published is simply just another step in the journey, because we learn something from it, we move forward from it, and we're always looking to, okay, where are we going next? So we build careers here at My Book Therapy, and we want you to build a career, not just a one-book wonder, but a career, a body of work that you can be proud of, that you can continue to go out and influence people with. So think about the fact that even in this stage, you are learning how to become an author. You are learning how to wrangle that dream into submission, or rather, pursue that dream. You're getting the tools on how to pursue that dream, and you're growing as a person. I'm a much better person, I hope, today than I was, 10 years ago or 15 years ago when I first started writing. I'm much more diligent. I'm much more patient. I'm much more willing to listen to people's ideas. I'm much more moldable. All of these things that have happened as a result of my writing journey. So think of it this way. You are not wasting your time when you set out on this journey and you try. All right, next. I love this one. Can't you just be content? It's safer and more godly, really, to just be content with what you have. I love that, because I think that what happens is that You have people out there that are like, what's your problem? You have a happy life. You have good kids. You have a good family. Why do you need to pursue something else? I mean, what's your problem? And the truth of the matter is that I've had people say this to me. When I was a missionary, I actually had someone, I was working on a manuscript. And believe it or not, this person came into my office and in the middle of my manuscript, made a space and wrote a paragraph on why what I was doing was useless, why it was a waste of my time, why I should be as a missionary pursuing other things, and why I should be pretty much ashamed of myself that I was spending this time writing fantasy, which if you know, I write romance, so that was even worse. So, you know, what happened is that person just decided to put me in my place and pretty much tell me, why did I think that I should be doing this? I was a missionary. I should be content with that. And I have kind of learned that I don't know why people write these kind of things. I think that it's just nasty and wrong. But the reality is that he was content with what he did. He was a professor and he was very happy with it. And so he just thought, well, I should be content with what I did. But the reality is that the dream that I had in my heart was different than the dream that he had in his heart. And if I had said to him, dude, you should just be content with the learning that you have. You don't need to pursue more learning. He would have said, what? No, I want to be a better person. I want to be a better professor. And I would have said, exactly. God had put that dream in my heart to be a writer. And I was still a missionary. I'm still a missionary at heart. But I was just pursuing a different avenue to share that truth that I had in my heart. So the reality is that I wanted to pursue that to make myself a better person, to make myself to run after that. It didn't mean that I wasn't content with what I had. I was very, very, very content. I loved my family. I loved my ministry. I loved my life. But I had a dream in my heart, and it was a dream that pushed me forward. I love these quotes from Ministry Today magazine. It says, dreams are the goals and visions that fire your heart and saturate your soul with joy at the very thought of them. That's so true for me as a writer. I love to write. I love to write. I love to see words come together. I love to see stories come together. I love to tell stories. This is so much fun for me. I love to teach too. I love to teach writing. This is like my sweet spot. So for me to do this, to pursue this, is something that's beyond just a goal. To be honest with you, a person who's really a writer, really a teacher at heart, they do that for free. It's not about the money. It's not about the fame. It's because they have joy in it. It's like Eric Liddell, right? I feel the pleasure of God when I run. I feel that when I write. And for true writers, I believe they feel that. It doesn't mean it's not hard work, but it means that they have joy in that process. I love this one too. A dream doesn't drive you. It draws you. It is like a big magnet that pulls you toward itself. And if you have a big, gigantic dream, it will do that. You will not be able to ignore it. It will be in your heart, and it will be something that you cannot get rid of. And so when people say, you know, is this really a dream of yours? Well, you know, why do you want to do this? It's because you can't not do it. It's because you love it so much that it's part of who you are, and it's how you express yourself. All right, I get some nods from my cohorts here. Rachel, do you have anything to add to that?
I was just going to say tonight I was downtown at a local shop. They were having a fundraiser. I donated some books. They invited me down. They treated me like I was a celebrity. And there were other people there too donating things. And it was great fun. It was small, but it was great. And there was a woman there who was an esthetician. And she was talking about when she was a little girl, she would have her brother lay down. And she would like rub his face and put cream on his face and do his hair. And my own hairstylist used to cut the hair off all her dolls. And so I think there's something in all of us who know what we're called to do. And we do all of those things within the confines of faith. If you're a Christian and you believe in God's call in your life, we do all of those things within that confine. I'm married to a pastor, but praise God, no one has ever put me in the stereotypical pastor's wife role because I don't think I've walked a lot. So I think that the big thing for us is to free up our hearts, to do the things that God has called you to do. And that's really what you're responsible for. You're not responsible for what man think of you or what looks like is the Christian life. Like for Susie, you know, she had to do what was God had called her to do, no matter what other people thought the typical missionary life looked like. And so I just want to encourage you guys to ask God for the dreams. That's what Psalm 37 is. He gives you the desires of your heart. So what's on your heart, what you want, is probably given to you by God. And if it's not happening, you may need to redress. Is God, am I pursuing my own things out of fear or ambition? Or is this really what you've called me to do? So
good. That's very good. Exactly. So, all right, let's talk a little bit about this last dream killer before we just keep going and talk about my book therapy. I love this one. Do you know how many people want to get published? Be serious, man. It's easier to get married after 40 than to be published, right? All right, actually, today, not so much, because you can do a lot of publishing online and hybrid publishing, self-publishing. But I would say to be published traditionally, yeah, it's probably still just as hard. But the reality is that publishers will always want a great story. And it is never too late to get published, okay? So what happens is that I pulled up a couple of people here. Laura Ingalls Wilder. Did you know that she did not publish her first book till the age of 64? And she did not know she could, she kept all these journals and all of these kind of things. Rose, her daughter, was the one that helped her get published. She was the one that helped her put everything together and get published. So obviously we have all grown up on Little House in the Prairie. It's become a phenomenal success. But Laura, who had just been keeping journals her whole life, had no idea this was going to happen, but she wanted to get published. And she just kept sort of putting it together, and her daughter came alongside, and it happened. And so she's a great example of someone who just kept trying. The second one is Susan Boyle, who at the age of 48 was when she got discovered. You guys know Susan Boyle's story? Okay, now Susan Boyle is a great example.
She's amazing there.
She's amazing, and she this is actually her singing at like the Commonwealth Games, the opening of the Commonwealth Games in 2014 or 13 or 12 or something. But the point is that Susan Boyle she never stopped. Everyone thinks, oh, she just came out of the woodwork. Well, actually, no, she had done these tiny little things. She made, you know, she auditioned for, she went to the School of Scotland in Edinburgh for acting. She had auditioned for a little bit part here. She had submitted a song for a tape here. She had a collection of songs here, but nothing really happened. It was just like she kept chipping away at all of these kind of things. She was at home taking care of her mom, but she never let her dream die. Like Beth said, she just always had some little something going on. And she applied for Brighton's Got Talent. And when she first applied, she thought, I'm never going to get in because I'm too old. But she thought, well, I'll try. And then, of course, her mom died. And so she was like, I don't think I can do this. And she had a couple of friends that were like, yes, 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 you can. And it was kind of an experiment. When Britain's Got Talent brought her on, they were like, okay, can this old person, I just want to go old, right, whatever, can this old person, garner the votes of the audience? And they kind of thought that she was going to go down. And by the way, she had actually been mocked by a producer earlier on for one of her previous songs that she put out. So it wasn't like she had like all these fans all along. She was riding against the tide here. And she got up there and she says, I don't care. I'm putting it all out there. I'm pursuing my dreams. And it just, boom, took off. And so much so that she was like completely freaked out by it. So the reality is that here's a woman that just continued trying and refused to give up the dream, and to the point where she was going all out and doing something crazy, like going Britain's Got Talent. And then it happened for her. And now she makes like $22 million or something crazy like that. I mean, or she's just really wealthy. She's done a great job. So the point is that you are never too old, and you just keep trying because you just don't know when it's going to happen. And again, right. Publishing is not magic. It's just hard work. So you just keep moving forward on it. All right. All right, here's dream killer number 5, and then we'll talk a little bit about my book therapy. Even if you do get published, you'll never make any money at this. You're better off delivering pizzas. All right, I want to mention that again. If you are a person that is publishing because you want the money, then probably this isn't the business for you. You're better off making widgets or selling mittens online.
Or delivering pizza.
Like that. or delivering pizza, yes. Now, all that to say is that you can eventually make good money in the publishing industry if you continue at it. And that's one thing that we teach at My Book Therapy is how to get to create a career that actually makes money. So let's just stop for a second and talk about this person, J.K. Rowling. She spent 7 years writing Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. She was on government assistance while she was doing it. She had tried many times to get published. She submitted this book to 12 publishers before she actually got a publisher to pick her up. She landed an advance of £1,500, which I think is about, I don't know, $3,000 or is it $750? I can't remember.
No, it's double. So it'd probably be closer to maybe like $2,500-ish, $3,000. Yeah.
So $2,500 for the first book. It had an initial print run of 1,000. 500 of those copies went to libraries. Okay? So when it first came out, it was nothing. It won an award 6 months after it came out, and it got over here to the U.S., and that's when it started to get some traction because Simon & Schuster picked it up. So the reality is that J.K. Rowling was not wealthy, and she was on government assistance, and she was really fighting for her dreams. And when she first landed her contract, she was like, okay, I got a contract for $2,500. I'm certainly not going to make a lot of money at that. But she kept moving forward and she kept writing her book. Now she is obviously a millionaire, billionaire, I think. I think she's the richest woman in England. I think she's richer than the Queen.
She's the first billionaire author.
Yes. And Harry Potter continues to be a huge industry that she makes money from all the time. So the reality is that, yeah, you can make money at this. All right, now. However, most of us are not J.K. Rowling. I would say that most of us are probably more like getting the $2,500 advances. So how do you make money in publishing? And again, this is something we teach at My Book Therapy, but you basically need three things. First of all, you need a body of work. Okay, so you need to build a brand because people like, they like to continue to purchase things of the same caliber. So like if I'm reading a thriller, I want to, get Harlan Coben. Or if I'm reading military, I'm buying Ronnie Kendig. You know, if I'm reading princess romance books, I'm getting Rachel. And so it just kind of depends on what you like to write and what your brand is, but you need to build a brand. So remember every book that you have out there is a product. And if you make, let's say you sell 500 copies and you make $1,000 a year on a book. Well, if you have one book out there, that's not a lot of money. If you have 40 books out there, that's $40,000 a year. So I'm saying that, most people make most of their money in publishing by producing a lot of books. Which means that you need a system of getting a story written. You need a strategy. And so you need to figure out how to be able to put a book together and how to get it out there and how to write a great story again and again and again. And then you need a strategy for building a fan base. How do you get people to buy your books over and over and over again? So these are the things that you need, that you learn in order to create a career. And it's something that we teach you at My Book Therapy. But these are the three things that you need. And you can make money at this. You may not be a millionaire, but you may make $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 a year, depending on how many books you have out there and how good your books are selling. And frankly, people can live on that. So I hope you don't have to be J.K. Rowling to make money in this industry. And here's the thing. Again, it goes back to what are you drawn to do? If this is your dream and you love it, then you're spending every day doing something you love. And yeah, you're making money at it and you're content. You're happy. All right. Rachel, go ahead.
I just want to say one thing real quick. If your goal is to make money, then perhaps God has put money, making money on your heart and he has a strategy for you to make money. There's nothing wrong with wanting to make money, especially if your heart is to give and to help others and to be the one from whom God can channel money, or that you can build industry and employ people. That's a great thing. So if your goal is to make money initially, that's buy a Papa John's franchise, but you're not going to make money writing novels out the door. There's a few exceptions to that. And those are the ones that we kind of hang our hats on and think, oh, yeah, but so-and-so came out with their first novel and it went gangbusters. I knew a novel back when I first started, and she was in the secular market, and her novel went to a bidding war, and I think she got close to $250,000 for it. That novel went nowhere. Nowhere. I mean, and I haven't even heard of the woman anymore. It doesn't mean she's not around, but I've just, you know what, she was someone who was expected to pop off the charts, and it just didn't happen. So, you know, you never know how the industry is going to treat you. But by and large, it's going to be one book at a time, 1 year at a time, and you're going to be a 25-year overnight success. So just hang in there. But if your heart is to make money, go ask the Lord for the avenue in which to make money in a quicker way.
Mm-hmm.
And then buy a book for us.
All right, good. Let's talk a little bit about My Book Therapy. So this is halftime. So if you want to, you can go get a drink of water or go to the bathroom. But for those that want to stick around,
stay.
We do want you to stay. So okay. So
this is a halftime show.
Yeah, this is a halftime show. So these guys will dance while I talk about what the My Book Therapy membership is all about. So My Book Therapy started as a blog, and we grew from there to a community. We have about 30,000 members now. And then we realized that a lot of people needed advanced teaching, and so we created what's called the Premium Membership. The Premium Membership is a place inside of My Book Therapy that people can access to get things that tools they need in order to get published and stay published. And that includes a library of over 1,000 blogs and articles on the craft and career as a writer. It's about, we have master classes on all aspects of publishing, from craft to, you know, starting your story, to editing your story, to creating a proposal, to building a fan base, to running your career, to setting up a business, all of those kind of things that help you become an authorpreneur. We have a weekly pep talk or webinar on the writing business. And so a craft of writing, you know, all that sort of thing, fan base, all those things, it happens every Thursday night. We like to invite you guys in to see what we do. It's very casual. We have a lot of fun here. Normally the chat is open. I've had a couple of our premium members say, hey, we're not chatting together tonight. And that's because it's a very friendly place. We really felt like we wanted to keep it closed for tonight. But normally it's open, and the members get together. They talk about craft together. We have a great time. Sometimes we sing a song. But most of the time it's just us talking and answering your questions about getting published and helping you to really feel like you have an ally in the industry. So this month we have, or in the past months, we've had James Scott Bell come on. We've had other guest writers come on and authors about the writing, the craft of writing. We've had, you know, special seminars on, you know, social media, anything you can think of. And of course, this whole, all of the shows are taped. And so people can always go back and download them and listen to them over and over again and just fill up their writing time with crafting shows from us that will help them. So that's something that we do. That's called MBT Live. And then, of course, we have our discounts to store products, and we have tickets to our events that are also on sale for premium members. We have a big pizza party every year coming up. And then finally, you know, becoming a member of My Book Therapy gives you industry recognition. We have had many people that have gotten published as a result of being a member of My Book Therapy. Our Fraser finalists, we have a contest, have gotten published. And now when people say, I am a My Book Therapy premium member, editors and agents go, oh, because they know you're investing in your craft and they know you've taken it seriously. And we take it seriously. We answer your questions when you write to us. We you know, answer your questions here in the pep talks. And we are your cheerleaders. We're trying to help you guys pursue your dreams. So here's a kind of a look of what it looks like right now to be inside of our My Book Therapy premium membership. You'll see at the top, we have our video, we have our weekly events, we have our codes, and we have our discount codes. And then we have also our weekly lesson. And then you can see all the training that happens. So it's really easy to use and to get around. And of course you can search for any topic you want and it will pull it up. So again, when you are with My Book Therapy, our whole goal is to get you published and stay, help you stay published. It's all about the career. Now, I want to say that right now, because you're here tonight, you're going to get an email that says that you can join My Book Therapy at a discounted rate, and that will be in your email. I also want to say that starting next month, all of our classes, we have three levels of classes. We have a story crafters level. We have what's called Extreme Book Makeover, which is our master classes on how to edit yourself into publication. And our proposals, our classes and building a fan base are going to be separated out into three different categories. If you join this month, and if you are a member at the end of this month, and for this for all the members, you will have lifetime access to all of those things. And so, or I should say access as long as you are a member to all of those things. Anyone that joins after October 1st will have to buy the program separately from their membership. So if you join now, you can just buy the membership and you'll get all of that access to all of our things without any extra cost. Starting October 1st, it's going to be separated out and people will have to purchase the separate programs and then purchase MBT Live separately in order to get access to everything. So if you're interested and you want to pursue, if this is something that you are interested in checking out, I would suggest getting on for a week for free, which we do offer, seeing if it's something you like. And then I would join before the end of this month at your discounted rate that will, by the way, never change. It's a lifetime discount so that you will retain access to everything and you won't have to buy the program separately. So that's just a little heads up. And for premium members that are already premium members, you are grandfathered in. So you will always have access to that content and you will never have to buy the extra programs as long as you're a member. So something to consider and think about as you go forward. All right. Any Rachel, Beth, do you guys have anything to say about that?
That's an impressive offer. I didn't know about that, but that's an impressive offer.
We try to make it something that is, we know people are pinching pennies, you know, and so that's something that's important, but we also know people have made an investment. So we just want to help people as much as they possibly can. Rachel?
One of the things that we run across a lot as published authors, and even some people probably within My Book Therapy who have some experience will run into, people want you to help them for free. And time is money. And while, you know, people helped me and people helped Susie and people helped Beth, and we're more than willing, everyone who's come up this road is more than willing to reach a hand down and pull someone else up with them and help someone along. But there's only so much that we have time to do. And if you come in and you go, hey, I have this story, will you please read it and help me? Now what do I do? How do I get published? This story needs a lot of work is usually what we'll say. And I've had this happen many times and it's heartbreaking because then instead of reworking that story and going and learning craft, I get another story from that person. And I'm like, you didn't even learn the craft from the first time. And so what happens is that there's just only so much time. And My Book Therapy, believe it or not, costs money to run. So Susie is very generous, not only with her time, but, you know, you got to run a website. That costs money. She has an employee. She has to pay him to keep things going and to keep us giving you live feeds like tonight and all of the stuff that's on the website. So it is really, really worth your money. And if I wasn't published, I would be finding a way to pay for this. I would be eating less whatever it is I eat. I would be less movies. We would have, you know, a night of beans and weens at the house in order for me to pay for this. If I was tied in any way, shape, or form, if it's just impossible for you, at least get on the side and get to the free stuff. But it is well worth it to invest in your own craft. And Susie's absolutely right. We just ran into some agents on the floor of a trade show a few months ago, and they were like, oh, gosh, we love My Book Therapy authors. And so it's really worth it.
Yeah, I agree. If I had this sort of resource when I was getting published, well, it would probably have been less my head knocking against the table. It took me 4 books before I got published. Beth, how many did it take you to get published?
One. But I'm stubborn, and I came to the first ever Story Crafters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I then went home and tore that book apart and started applying everything that I learned from My Book Therapy to that book over and over again.
And that really is the key. You know, I think part of the My Book Therapy is a program where we actually teach people step by step on how to get published. There are, we do, you know, incorporate other resources, but we do have a program that, and it does work. And so that's one of the things is that, you know, you can use a whole bunch of other resources, and I encourage you to do that. But if you're trying to figure out how to synthesize it all together, we do that for you, and we help you figure out step by step how to do that.
And yet, you retain your voice, because you talked to me very clearly about that and said, Beth, you do not write romantic suspense. That is not your voice. And you talked to me very clearly about that voice. And so while you teach story crafting and the elements of writing, you still encourage writers to find their distinctive voice. You're not turning out Susie May Warren clones or Rachel Howe clones. You're teaching writers how to write, find their voice, but you're also teaching them key elements of writing story so that they can then polish their voice. And I say it all the time, I wouldn't be published except for My Book Therapy, and I would not be continuing to be published except for My Book Therapy.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, and that is important. We don't want to change anyone's voice. We want you to have your own voice. And just give you the tools to bring it to the page. So excellent. So look for that email. We're going to send it out as soon as that webinar is over, and it will give you more information on how to check us out for free, and then also how to access that discount for life. All right, let's get going. Dream killer number 6. What if people don't like it? Have you ever read Amazon reviews? Okay, the reality is there will be people that don't like your story. That's just the way it is. It's just, you can't be an author and have people, you know, always happy with your stories. And the fact is that, hey, you know what? Sometimes it just doesn't matter. I love this. Abraham Lincoln said this. I do the very best I know how, the very best I can, and mean to keep doing so until the end. If the end brings me out all right, what is said against me won't amount to anything. All right, I know that not everybody likes my stuff. But it's okay. I like my stuff. And I've tried my very best to give some people, you know, my readers, the very best story that I have for them. I don't leave anything on the field, as my football players would say. I play till I'm exhausted. And I just, and once I do that, I know I can't do anything more. And so it is a great feeling to know that you've put everything into a book. Now, doesn't mean that you won't have, you know, things that you can learn for the next book. You definitely will. But the reality is that you can't judge yourself on what your Amazon reviews say. Okay? Now, go ahead, Beth. I'm going to let you say something.
Okay. Here's the thing. Like Rachel tells me and Susie tells me, don't read Amazon reviews. And occasionally I do. Or somebody say, sent me an email, I'm so sorry you got this negative review on Amazon. And then she sent me the link to it. And I'm like, why would you think I would want this? And of course I clicked on the link like a crazy person. But it's true. And on my sane days, what I know is, once again, I have my security net. And I take my feedback from the people who I trust, who know me as a writer, and who know me. So I take it from you, I take it from Rachel, and from my agent. And those are the people that I take the feedback from. And I never go to the author portal on Amazon, because that's the portal to hell. I will say that. Don't go there. So, so that is so important, to really figure out, where are you anchoring your brain and your thoughts and your sense of self-worth? Because this business will make you crazy. Mm-hmm. If you do not anchor yourself to the right place.
Yes, that's exactly right. I always tell people, if you don't like who you are before you get published, you won't find happiness in publishing, because it gets harder. People will criticize you like you have never been criticized before in your life. So, and that's, you know, if you put it all on the page, left all your writing on the field, so to speak, then, you know, you're fine. But so I have some hints here on how to unpack your criticism, however. if you have gotten an Amazon review or a criticism from someone, I remember my first critique was totally ripped apart. I wept for like a half hour. I was like, I'll never write, I'm terrible. And then I started going, wait a second, wait, let's unpack this a little bit. So the first one is, first of all, start by writing books you enjoy reading, okay? If you don't like your book, how do you expect others to? And I'm serious about this. I have met authors that are like, oh, I hated my book, it was awful. And I'm like, if you hate your book, how do you expect other people to like your book? I mean, give us a story that you yourself would like to read. Now, there's a difference between being critical of your writing, self-critical, and going, okay, I can do this better, I can do this better. But to hate your own story, to hate your characters, no. You need to write a book you yourself would like to read. In fact, you know what, I'll be honest. Sometimes I pick up my own books and I read them again just because I'm like, oh, I like that. Because I'm my first reader and I like to read what I've written. And I like my heroes and I like my stories. And so I read them. And I know that sounds like I'm crazy, but you know, I like them. And so, and thankfully others do too. And so I think that's really important. Second of all, consider that the criticism comes from biased people. Okay, they could have had a bad day. They could have read somebody else's book that was, you know, that hit them better, and then yours didn't hit them quite as strongly, so they decided to give you a 3. You know, maybe they don't understand the mindset of your character. Whatever it is, here's the thing: you need to forgive people. All right, people don't mean it personally, which is, you know, the bottom one. It's not personal. They aren't trying to attack you. Now, occasionally there will be someone that attacks people. Rachel got personally attacked on Amazon, and we went and kind of stood up for her a little bit. And the reason that she got personally attacked is because she hit a soft spot or a sore spot with someone in her novel. And so the person decided to lash out at Rachel, like Rachel had meant that personally to that person. And Rachel handled it very well. But the reality is that clearly this person was hurting, and it was an opportunity for us to pray for her. And that's happened to me in the past. People have written me, you know, personal things. Oh, I didn't like that this happened or this happened. And then they tell me why. And it's usually because they had a personal experience and they didn't like the story truth that came out or whatever. In one of my recent books, I had a character who has a disease I don't give easy answers at the end. And I had a reader write to me and says, I don't know why you didn't have people pray over him and have him healed. And I'm like, because that wasn't his story. But she was really upset with me. Okay, well, that's fine. She can write that story. I'm not going to write that story. Maybe not yet. Maybe I will someday. But the point is that that wasn't this story. And so I had to remember she is biased. She has her own preconceived notions of what she wanted to see. And I had to forgive her for it and say, okay, no problem. And then the third thing is there any truth or any in any of the pieces of the criticism? You know, is there anything I can pull out and go, that was probably right. I'm going to learn from that. So a lot of times I go into Amazon reviews or any critiques and I say, Lord, help me learn what you want me to learn from this. Okay. And then I cut myself some slack by saying, okay, good stuff. Didn't know that last time. Going to do it differently this time. Awesome. You know, and I don't go back to the past and go, Susie, why didn't you do that? I say, okay, great. I learned from it. And then I go on. So I think that's a big part is that we just don't take it personally. It's not about us. No one's saying to me, Susie, you can't, you know, they're not cutting me down. They're just, you know, they're reacting to the story. And I think that's important. All right. Another one. Dream killer number 7, you write a book. Did you suddenly learn how to spell? Okay.
Who are these people?
They're really mean people. All right. So, you know, the whole you should probably go back to school if you want to learn to write a novel. And that's just stupid. First of all, you don't have to have a college degree to know how to tell a great story. Second of all, you can learn the craft of, you know, you can learn grammar, you can learn spelling, you have spell check. That is not the most important thing in a novel. You can hire people to proof your novel. I don't say you should hire someone to edit your novel into publication, but you can learn all the skills and talents of writing a novel without having a college degree, okay? Second of all, a lot of people that say this stuff, they want to feel superior. And so I've had people that have said, you know, I don't read fiction because it's lies. And I'm like, oh, awesome. I lie for a living. Yay. You know? And so stupid. That's a stupid thing to say. So the reality is that if you want to write a story, you can invest and learn how to write a story. If you know how to read, you can figure out how to write. And you can listen to videos and tapes and you can practice and make it happen. All right. So, again, you do not have to go to college and learn how to write a novel. All right. So, however, if you want to get trained, here are some ideas. First, start a library of reference books, okay? We would like you to go to store.mybooktherapy.com and start shopping there and pick up, you know, some foundational writing books there. But there's also a lot of other ones. I actually have a new book out called Conversations with a Writing Coach. It's a very fun conversational book that's on Amazon.com. It's $4.99 and it's in your Kindle. And that's it's 40 conversations of how to start with an idea and end with a finished book. And it's kind of a fun way to do it. But there's a lot of books out there on how to write a novel. And I have about 40 of them because I'm always trying to learn and trying to get better. And so I would encourage you to start a reference book library and just start reading all sorts of books about writing. Join writing groups locally and nationally. Join ACFW. Join RWA. Join, you know, go to writing conferences. Go to, you know, there's probably one in your area. Go to OCW or go to Inland Christian Writers or go to ACFW or go to the Greater Philly Conference or, you know, go to Write to Publish. All of these are great conferences. So go to those conferences. Attend online classes. We have them, but so does the Christian Writers Guild, so does Writers Digest. I mean, a lot of these places have writing classes that you can take. We're probably the cheapest, but, you know, they all have good stuff. Find a writing craft partner and grow together. That's what Rachel and I did, and Beth and I have often done, and that is that we're both learning the same thing. We're interacting. We're trying to figure out how to write better dialogue or write better scenes or write better story world, and we're doing it together and helping each other, and that's what a writing craft partner does. Read, and keep a craft journal. I talked about that a couple weeks ago, and that is something where I just read a lot. I read a book a week, and I am always trying to write down things that I've learned and little snippets that I enjoy. So you want to start collecting that stuff because it's going to get in your head and make you a better writer. And then Rachel touched on this, approach it step by step, not all at once. And I think this is really important. Do not bite the whole elephant in one gulp. All right, eat it piece by piece. Learn dialogue, then learn story world, then learn structure, then learn scene structure, then learn emotions, and then, you know, all of those kind of pieces, and it will eventually add up. But don't try to learn it all at once. All right. I don't want to run out of time here, so I'm just going to keep going. You already have a full plate. Why add more? Maybe start with cleaning your house. Okay. I wrote that down because my mother said that to me once. She said to me, Susie, I know you like this hobby a lot. I'd had 4 or 5 books published by this time. I know you really like your hobby, but, you know, maybe you should cook your family dinner sometime. I'm like, why? Don't they know how to cook? So the idea is that, you know, the fact is your plate is always going to be full. You're always going to fill it with something. And I'm sorry, but I just think I have a clean house. I just have it cleaned maybe once a week or once every 10 days. And it's okay. I don't have to have a spotless house because it's just going to get dirty again. And it's not that I don't have a clean house. It's just that no one's going to die if they eat macaroni and cheese for dinner once in a while. You know, it's just, I'm just saying priorities, and it doesn't have to be perfect all the time. So I used to have this friend who's a life coach, and she would talk about balance, and she would say balance isn't making everything perfect all at once. When you balance and you stand on one foot, you kind of are constantly moving, and that's how it is when you are trying to balance. Sometimes you're more in this area, sometimes you're more in this area, and so just, you know, your life doesn't have to be like even all the time. It can kind of flow. And so maybe, I mean, I just finished a book. I spent 4 days just like in the zone writing. Okay, there was no dinner. There was, you know, there was like, my husband was like, what are we eating? I'm like, open the fridge, find something. Now, I know you have, for those that you have little kids, you probably need to do more planning. And my friend Elena Turanian is fantastic. She probably makes meals in advance, you know, and this sort of thing. But there's ways to get around this. So the reality is loosen up and don't be so hard on yourself. And you have a full plate, but just move some stuff around and find a place to fit this in. And you don't have to be perfect. All right.
Amen.
Amen.
I have a quote.
Yes.
If first you don't succeed, lower the bar.
Right. Exactly. I mean, we're all like, oh, we all have to be like right up here, you know? No, we don't. We can move the bar around, you know? I always say, listen, I'm not great at 35 different Christmas cookies. I make 3. 3 awesome Christmas cookies. That's all I do.
I have my daughters make the Christmas cookies.
Right. And that's awesome. So if somebody else does it, that's great. So you don't have to be great at everything. Just be, you know, just make room for yourself. All right. I love this one. We write because we must. If my doctor told me I had only 6 minutes to live, I wouldn't brood. I'd type a little faster. And again, this one, I write for the same reason I breathe, because if I didn't, I would die. And I love this. Okay, your plate will feel full if you don't have anything to inspire you. But if you have things that you love to do, like write a story, your plate won't feel quite so full because you'll be energized and excited. And so I just want to encourage you that if you have that dream to write, to pursue that, because I believe you will feel empty without it. And life will give way to make room for your dreams. Mm-hmm. All right, and the Dream Killer 9, okay, hello, where would you start? Well, of course, I always say start with 10 questions. Who are you and what do you know? And so when I say 10 questions, what I mean is who are you? Give yourself 5 things that you are. I am adopted. I was a missionary. I am the oldest. I love to live in the North Shore. And, you know, I met my husband as a trail guide. Okay, interesting things that I have all built stories on. What do I know? What do I know? I know how to speak another language. I know how to, just a ton of things that I have then put into my novels. And so make yourself a list, 5 of who you are, 5 of what you know, and they will give you great ideas. And then look at yourself and ask, what are you already reading? Because that's where you should start writing. Find a genre that you already are familiar with and you already enjoy. Right, Beth?
Yes, ma'am. I don't like being in suspense.
That's right. All right. Who really do you think you are? This is the big one that people will often say. Who do you think you are to be a writer? You are a writer. Okay. Now, if someone is a musician, and even if they don't perform, people say, who are you? Oh, I'm a musician. I play the guitar. An artist. Who are you? I'm a painter. For some reason, they don't have a problem defining who they are. Who are you? I'm an accountant. I'm a lawyer. I'm a, you know, whatever. So why do we as writers have such a hard time defining who we are? Hello, we are writers. This does not make our dream any. We are no less than the artists, the painters, the rodeo kings, the, you know, the whatever it is. But for some reason, because it's so fragile, and because it comes from inside of us, and because it's our dream, we're hesitant to say it. We're not going to hesitate anymore. We are writers. We write. And that is what we do, and that is who we are, and that is why, that is the thing that inspires us. So I just want to encourage you to go out and be a writer. No more shying away. And from now on, when somebody asks you, say, what do? You can say, well, you could say, I'm a mom, or I work, you know, I'm a lawyer, or whatever. But I want to challenge you to say, I'm a writer. And then see what they do. They'll probably be a little taken aback, but then maybe a little bit impressed. Rach?
Can I modify that?
Yes.
Because if you're not published, then it gets embarrassing after that. Well, what have you published? Oh. Nothing. But I would say, I'm working on becoming a published author, or I'm a writer and I'm working on my novel. I'm
right.
You know, go ahead and classify it, because it goes downhill real quick when I start asking you, and people then think, oh yeah, like everybody and their brother, and this is where you got to make yourself stand out. I can throw a rock in my neighborhood and hit somebody who wants to write a novel. So there's a lot of people who say they want to do it and a lot of people not doing it. They're doing more talking about it than doing it. So sit your backside in the chair when you go, oh, I'm working on becoming a novelist, or whatever your writing venue is. I'm working on a blog. I'm working on a memoir. Then they say, oh, well, how's it going? You go, well, you know, I have 10 chapters in. I'm really impressed with myself. And they will be too. And then they'll say, wow, how are you doing that? I've got a book in me too. 80% of the world has a book in them. All people in the world say they have a book in them. So let me just give you some qualifications to that. Because I think, in my mind, there is a reward out there for you that you can actually say, I'm a writer, when you've actually accomplished something. So I would put that out there more as a carrot for you. So when I was starting out, I would say, well, I'm working on writing. I'm writing at night. I'm trying to write a novel. I want to be a writer, was what I would say. And then when I was published, I went full time. It's been 10 years now. I would say, I'm a writer. And it's my favorite thing to say. We have writer friends who hate to tell people that they're writers. And I'm like, why? I like, I beg people to ask me what I do, because it's, you know, you never meet a published novelist. I mean, it's just a rare thing. So I love saying I'm a writer, and then they go, oh, well, you know, what have you written? And they're kind of like dubious, because you always hear people say it. And I'm like, oh, I've got about 18, working on 19 novels. And they're like, oh, now everything changes. And so
I agree, except that I also think that even if you aren't published, you're still a writer. I think that there is something to say that, I mean, I say I'm a novelist because I've written novels, but I could still say I'm a writer even if I wasn't published, because I am a writer. That's what my passion and dream is. You don't say I'm a musician and people say, oh, what albums have you cut? They just say you're a musician. And so I think you can say you're a writer, and then you can say I'm aspiring to be a novelist. I write blogs and I write for my church, you know, newspaper, but I'm really working on a novel. I'm about halfway in. So I think there's a difference there.
Now, I would say if someone said to me, I'm a musician, I'm thinking they're making a living at it. My guys in my band at church don't tell people they're a musician. I work at Racetrack. I'm an accountant. I'm a student. And I play in a band. You know, to me, when you say you're a writer, I think I'm a writer, it means you're making a living at it. And that's what you all aspire to. But that's where I see the difference. A guy who plays at a club on Friday night, to me, is not a musician. He's a guy who isn't, you know what I mean? I would maybe not expect him to have cut an album, but I think it's something that's, there's a difference.
Is it interesting? I think this is an interesting perspective. I really do. It's interesting to see both sides of this.
But I get where she's coming from.
What I want is for people to stop seeing themselves as not a writer. I wanted them to step into their destiny as a writer, because I feel it's very important for us to see ourselves as writers as we pursue writing. And you may not be a published novelist, but it doesn't mean that you're not writing something. And so I guess I would, you know, I think you could qualify by saying I'm working on a novel, but I am a writer. You know, you can also be a mom, a teacher, and a lawyer, but you're also a writer.
I agree.
Go ahead, Beth.
I do remember making the choice to pursue my writing again. I had stepped off the writing road, but in my heart I was still a writer. But I spent 15 years teaching women's Bible studies, and I had to make the choice to step away from that to focus on my writing. And I remembered the first time somebody asked me, what do you do? And for the longest time I had been saying, I'm a mom and I teach women's Bible studies. And the first time somebody asked me that, and I said, I'm a writer. And it was a complete change of focus. It was like a verbal commitment to that change I had made. And it was speaking out that dream for the first time in years. And it made a difference. It was like a verbal commitment to myself.
That's really good.
That's what I remembered. Was I'm speaking out this dream and I'm saying it out loud, and it made a difference to me.
Exactly what I'm getting at, is that you need to speak it out loud. You need to speak your dream out loud and pursue it. You are a writer. Run after it.
That's right.
All right, we're going to answer just a few questions that came in during our talk. First of all, this is for Diana, who wanted to know how to balance writing and marketing. Okay, until you are published, I would say that you need to focus more on the writing part, but build a fan base of, you know, have a blog that goes out, you know, talk about what you're doing with your writing. You know, we talk about building fans on My Book Therapy, and it really is about connecting with people. So, you know, everyone has their own bent. Gina Holmes, who runs Novel Rocket, kind of talked about her own writing journey, and then by the time she got published, she already had a large following. There are people that you know blog and about certain topics and have a following. I would say that though, your blog does help you with your writing skills, so I would encourage you to do that. But if you're spending more time marketing than you are writing, then you're not going to pursue the writing. So I would say that, you know, for me, I usually spend, you know, a few minutes on Mondays, you know, and then maybe 15 to 20 minutes every day on a little bit of Facebook marketing stuff. If I have a big launch coming up, I work harder on it. But the reality is that most of my time is still spent writing. So I would say maybe 80-20 of your time should be spent marketing, something like that. So the rest of it should be spent writing. Let's see here. There was another one. Elizabeth, she asked a great question. How do you move from working on the big novel, not publish it, and begin your next phase of the dream? Well, you'd say, what did I learn from the last novel? What did I like about it? What do I feel I should write next to build on those skills? And then you push forward into another novel. Now, here's another thing I suggest. People like series, and a lot of people will say, well, I'm going to write book two in the series. Well, the reality is if book one never sells, then book two will never sell. I always tell people, start the first book in the next series. This is what I did. I had three different series going. I started book one of one series, finished that. Started book two of another, or book one of a second series, finished that. Started book one of a third series. Guess what? I sold all three series at one conference. I sold seven books in one conference. Okay? I was very busy for a couple of years. It was fantastic. But the reality is that I had all of these different marketable products. I sold them to different publishers. So if you are, think of it as an, so I would not start book two. Start another book one of a new series so that you have something else to sell and you will learn from it. And you can keep it in the same genre. You can move to a different genre if you have an interest in that, whatever. But I would, to build a brand, it's better to stay in your same genre. So, okay. So now one more. I hope that was helpful. How do you know you still have fire in the belly to keep going after a strong critique? Well, first of all, remember, it's not personal. Second of all, is there anything that they said that would help you become a better writer? And thirdly, can you think of ways as you lay in bed at night to apply what they said to your novel? If you can do those things and you can take out the personal part and put it aside and you still have a desire to fix that story and to see what's going to happen to your characters, then you still have that fire in your belly. Beth?
Whenever we talk about it's not personal, I always see Meg Ryan in the movie You've Got Mail, and Tom Hanks goes, it's not personal, and she goes, what do you mean by that? It's not personal. It may not be personal to you, but it feels personal to me. Because I think there's truth to that. It's not personal, but we have to admit that there's a part that feels personal. And I think we need to admit that and give ourselves a little bit of time to feel that, maybe pray over that, and maybe look at the critique, set it aside, walk away from it, maybe in the quiet of our room somewhere, kind of fume over it if we need to, because it does feel personal. Or fume over it with Rachel over Skype, whatever we need to do. You know, I'm not saying I've ever done that, but I'm just saying. Because it does feel personal, but then we have to get into a place where it's not personal.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think the strong critique, we also need to say, who gave us that strong critique? Is it a trusted strong critique? So you take the context of the critique and you also admit that, yes, it does feel personal, but you get yourself into a space where you are professional. And you're taking that critique apart, because if you're in this business, you are going to be critiqued and you're going to have to learn how to deal with it.
Absolutely. Good. Very good. Yeah, because I totally agree. It does feel personal. It helps me to say they don't know me and they don't know what my heart was and my intent was. But clearly I didn't communicate it the way I'd hoped. So how do I do that? And so that kind of helps me a little bit. And I also sometimes have to just forgive people. That's just it.
Yes.
Rachel, go ahead.
I just want to say sometimes, and sadly, sometimes you'll get a critique from an author who maybe is only a little bit farther down the road than you. And they've got just enough rules and guidelines, maybe some craft to be dangerous, helpful, but maybe dangerous as well. And so what they'll learn that, you know, was is a bad passive word. And so they'll mark you way down because you had two was's in your scene. Or they might think they might misunderstand what you understand as deep point of view. And so they'll think that you are saying things that aren't in the right point of view, or that you're head hopping when really you're just observing. I had an editor flag me one time because she thought that I was saying how another character felt or looked when it was really just the observation of my heroine. But the way that I write, I don't have a lot of qualifiers like she thought or she felt. She felt he looked angry. I would just say he looked angry. And so she thought I was jumping over to that guy's head. And so I had to write back and go, no, this is how deep point of view works. And so a lot of times what will happen is you'll just get someone who's unusually harsh. You know, they have a little tiny, you know, like a box cutter as a weapon, and they're just doing the damage that they can. So you have to really just step back sometimes and take some of it with a grain of salt, and then find someone like a Susie or a Beth or me or someone that you know is a little more experienced and go, could you just help me break this down? And if you don't have someone like that, you can still figure it out for yourself. Believe me, you can. We've all done it. Susie and I did it early on, and when we didn't have each other and we didn't have a lot of other people in our lives. So, but I just want you to know, sometimes you're going to get a judge that's unusually harsh.
Yeah. I love this. Go ahead, Beth.
There's a rogue judge out there somewhere.
Yeah.
She's out there, or he's out there. So.
That's right. I love this quote. At first, dreams seem impossible, then improbable, and eventually inevitable. You just keep pressing down that road, and your dreams will start to materialize. All right. So hopefully this has been helpful to you guys. We really appreciate you all being here. We know that you could spend your Thursday night anywhere else, and the fact that you spend it with us is awesome. We appreciate you very, very much. If you do have any questions, you can always write to us. Visit our website, mybooktherapy.com. There's a little box on there that says, what's your writing problem? And you can write to us, and we'll help you solve your problems right there. Or you can always write to admin@mybooktherapy.com, or beth@mybooktherapy.com, or susan@mybooktherapy.com, and we'll be glad to help you guys along the way. Look for that email and it'll be in your inbox here soon. We'll include all of the PDF slides in case you'd like to look at them again. And for premium members, we will be back here next Thursday night with another great event. If you go to the premium member locker room, we have a little video up that's talking about all the different events for this month, and we're very excited. And if you haven't picked up your pizza party ticket, we encourage you to do that because we have a lot of fun coming up. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for being here. Rachel and Beth, you guys were fantastic. I so appreciate you. You're awesome.
Thanks, everyone.
And as usual, everyone, go and write something brilliant.
Woo! Good night.